Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Evening listener, you're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about insidious invaders. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Marty Martin is Paul J. McSorley. Now, get your ticket ready. Take your seat in our theater of the minds. Embrace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by Marty Martin and performed by Paul J. McSorley. In it, we are introduced to the first installment of a series from a new author. Now, without further ado, I present to you Farmerville, Episode 1, Till Those Cows Come Home. Our narrator. So much has happened in our history. Our town is a place that urban legend would have you believe is cursed, doomed for heartache and tragedy. I believe that to be true, and by the time you've learned our story, you'll believe it too. Where should I begin? Some would say start at the beginning, but what fun would that be? For this story, it's best we start with today. Do you believe in destiny, coincidences, heaven and hell, good and evil? Let's get started. Traffic stop. Friday, 4:40 p.m. Friday of Halloween weekend, Ron's day was going just like any other day, uneventful. Ron had just heard an update on the radio about a sighting of two armed and dangerous escaped convicts from Illinois. A 45-year-old Larry Smith and Terry Waters, 24, a fact he didn't take too seriously, given the sighting was 300 miles from southeast Missouri. Ron had driven about 5 minutes out of Farmerville in his police cruiser when a high-pitched alarm from his dashboard radar alerted him to an oncoming speeding vehicle going 90 miles an hour in a 55 zone. Ron recognized the red Caddy as it zipped past him. "Damn, Holcomb, what's the hurry?" Ron turned on his emergency lights and siren, made a U-turn, and pursued. During the first minute, Ron thought the Caddy was not going to stop, but then it suddenly slowed down and pulled to the side of the road. Ron called in the traffic stop and did a license plate check. Ron got out of his cruiser and maintained caution while he approached until he was sure the driver was Dwayne Holcomb. He didn't know Dwayne and Cindy personally, but their kids were friends of Ron's daughter. "What's the hurry, Mr. Holcomb?" Ron asked as he walked alongside the driver's side. Dwayne appeared nervous as he hesitated to answer. I'm sorry. The lights, badge. I was just frazzled for a second. Ron Farmer, right?" "That's right. You and the family going to the Halloween festivities tonight?" We've been thinking about it. Well, if the kids will let us, that is. That's the truth, Ron said. They're at that age when they don't like us around too much. Our daughters have other plans tonight. Ron laughed and Dwayne joined in, awkwardly, nervously. What's got you in such a hurry, Dwayne? Trying to get to the bank before they close. I got a big purchase in the morning and need cash, and I just lost track of time. Dwayne's story sounded legitimate, but Ron sensed something about Dwayne was off. Tell you what, I'll let you get going. Just slow down, okay? Dwayne looked relieved, but it seemed a bit much for just speeding. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, and maybe I'll see you tonight. Ron had a feeling something wasn't right, but wasn't quite sure what it was. Dwayne's story sounded legitimate, but Ron sensed something about Dwayne was off. The Holcombs. 25 minutes earlier. Friday, 4:15 p.m. Dwayne Holcomb's home, a medium-sized wheat and dairy farm, was about 20 to 30 minutes outside of Farmerville. The view of the farm resembled an artist's vision of a beautiful rural setting. From the nearby state highway, a half mile of unpaved gravel road led up to the two-story classic white farmhouse, complete with a front porch, a not-so-classic satellite TV dish on the roof, and an assortment of seasonal and Halloween decorations. About 50 feet to the left of the driveway was a tool shed, and behind the shed sat two barns side by side with a pig pen behind one of them. Beyond that was the wide open acreage where about three dozen milk cows grazed. All in all, a typical farm with the typical scenery of a late fall afternoon. The slim 40-something Dwayne fit what some would call a stereotypical farmer. Short haircut, baseball cap, work boots, jeans, and flannel. The one non-stereotypical thing for Dwayne was his full black beard. His wife and two daughters also fit the stereotypical farm family. Cindy was in her late 30s, slender build and shoulder-length dirty blonde hair, long enough to tie back in a ponytail. She usually wore blue jeans, a t-shirt, and a flannel shirt. The oldest child was their 17-year-old daughter, Shanna, who took after her mother's looks and by all accounts was a typical teenager, always texting on her smartphone and part of a popular clique in her senior year in high school. Shane was their 16-year-old son, who took after his father except for the beard. Like his sister, Shane was addicted to his cell phone, was popular at school, and excelled in sports. However, he also had a stubborn streak and a temper. Dwayne was winding down his daily tasks before waiting for the cows to come home to milk. He'd been working in the first barn and came outside carrying a long-handled axe. He placed the axe against the side of the barn as he closed the door. He brushed himself off as he walked toward the house, then took off his work gloves and stuffed them in his pocket. He briefly took in the sights before he walked up the four steps to the front porch. The old screen door groaned when he opened it, an impromptu announcement that someone was entering the house. As he opened the front door, the hinges made that familiar creak. The screen door slammed shut as he entered and closed the front door. Dwayne took off his baseball cap and hung it on a wall-mounted hat rack by the doorway. He turned and walked toward the opening of the living room.
What the?
Meet the convicts. Two rough-looking men pointed pistols at Dwayne, his wife, and two teenage children. Before he could say anything, one of the men yelled at him,
"Happy Halloween! Don't say a word, Mr. Holcomb."
The older man pointed a 9mm Beretta pistol at Dwayne. The other man held a revolver-type pistol on Cindy and the kids.
"Hey, Dad, this is Mr. Smith and his friend Terry," Shane said angrily with sarcasm.
"You can just call me T," the younger convict said, smiling.
Dwayne recognized the men from an earlier news alert. The older man motioned toward a chair with his gun.
"Take a seat."
Dwayne's mind raced with concern for his family, almost overpowering his self-control with the temptation to attack the convicts. He moved to the overstuffed chair next to the couch. He glanced at his family and could see they were physically upset, a nervous shake, and trying not to make eye contact with the convicts.
"It'll be all right," he whispered to them.
His son Shane was angry, red-faced and staring at the convicts. Dwayne noted Shane's if-looks-could-kill expression.
"That boy of yours would like nothing better than take us out back and shoot us," Smith said.
"He's not going to do nothing," Dwayne said sternly as he glanced at Shane.
"That's right, he's not going to do anything, because you know what'll happen if he or any of you does," Smith threatened. "I put a bullet in all his head,"
the other convict, who went by the name T, yelled, which briefly startled everyone, including Smith. Smith regained his composure, smiled, tilted his head, and looked at Dwayne's family.
"Understand?"
"We got it,"
Dwayne answered as the rest of the family nodded yes, except for Shane, who continued stewing.
"Yeah, I'll be keeping a special eye on you, young man," Smith told Shane.
Silence briefly filled the room as Smith walked around and stopped in front of the wall clock.
"Almost 4:30, right?"
he said out loud as he stared at the clock. After a few seconds, Smith turned toward everyone and gave them a look like he was expecting an answer.
"Yeah, it's after 4, Dwayne answered.
So what time do those cows come in to get milked? They just come on their own, or you have to go get them?"
"They come in on their own. They start heading in around 5 or 5:30.
Smith nodded as he slowly walked to the other side of the room toward an old-fashioned roll-top desk. He glanced over the clutter and grabbed a piece of paper.
"You know what I found when I was rummaging around waiting for you? A bank statement. Oh, and if you didn't know already, we've been here, I guess, about an hour waiting for you to get back. What you think, T?"
"Yeah, an hour, I'd say. We was thinking of taking some turns with your wife and girl there. I figured we'd wait so you could watch."
T laughed. "I see that boy of yours has a bit of you in him," Smith jokingly told Dwayne.
"Anyways, back to this piece of paper there, Mr. Holcomb. Or is it okay to call you Dwayne?"
Smith asked. Dwayne nodded, making eye contact.
"Good. So, Dwayne, this piece of paper is what looks like your most recent bank statement. And I tell you, as soon as I said bank statement, T there almost pushed me out of the way. Did some looking around, got on your computer, and you know what he did? You don't need to answer that. Tell him, T."
"Well, Larry here been in prison so long, he knows nothing about online banking. Well, what I found was you even have more than what's on that statement, that you have $27,000 in the bank. That's a nice nest egg."
"Yes, it is there, Dwayne, a real nice nest egg. You know what? It must be destiny, God's will or something, because when you think about it, all of the houses we could have stopped at to find a few bucks, we stop at your place and hit the jackpot. It's got to be an omen or destiny of some kind."
"It's destiny, all right,"
Shane blurted out with a grin.
"Shane," Dwayne said.
"That's all right there, Dwayne," Smith said with a laugh. "Parenting is a tough job."
Smith paced the room for a moment while T kept an eye on the family.
"I guess next thing is for you to go and get that money out of the bank, Dwayne."
"What? Get the money?"
Dwayne glanced back and forth at his family and Larry.
"Yes, Dwayne, get the money. As a matter of fact, you need to get up and go to the bank, get that money and hurry back. Understand?"
"It's a half hour into town and it's already almost 4:30 and the bank closes at 5.
"You better hurry then."
"How about I stay and my wife goes and gets the money?"
"No, I'm staying with the kids," Cindy said.
"That's right, she and the kids are staying," Smith told Wayne.
"Look," Dwayne said.
"No buts or anything. I promise we're not going to do anything to your wife and kids, okay? You get that money, get back here, and we'll be gone, all right?"
Dwayne reluctantly nodded and stood up. Larry pointed him to the door.
"So, Dwayne, I guess we do need to have a schedule on when you get back, you think?"
Maybe an hour and a half? Tell you what, Dwayne, you get going, and we'll give you till those cows come home to get back here, okay?
Not okay, Dwayne said. You better get going and stop wasting time. Get that money and get back, and no ideas about cops or anything. If you're not on time, well, not sure what might happen with the family.
Hurry, Cindy said.
Yeah, hurry back, Shane said sarcastically.
You ass!
Shanna yelled at Shane as she slapped him hard across the face. Smith and T broke out in laughter, then Smith opened the front door and motioned for Dwayne to leave. Smith closed the door and watched Dwayne through the window as he went around to the garage on the side of the house. A minute later, Dwayne drove off in a red Cadillac sedan.
That's odd,
Smith said, laughing as he walked back into the living room.
What?
T asked.
Farmer's driving a Cadillac.
Smith and T laughed and joked for a minute about the Cadillac, then turned their attention towards Cindy and the kids. Cindy and Shanna were nervous, but Shane's attitude had not changed. He was still angry.
You guys said you weren't going to do anything. He'll be back with the money and you can go, Cindy pleaded.
Smith laughed.
Come on, Cindy. You know there's no way he can get back in the hour. Those damn cows are going to be coming in, what, 20, 30 minutes? We promised till those cows come home. But since we know he ain't going to make it, we're just going to get a head start.
You don't got to do this, Cindy continued. Please.
Yes, we do. And you know what? It's been a few years for both of us, so we're going to have some fun. And the best part of it, we don't have to fight because we got the best motivator in the world, a protective mom.
What?
Yeah. With a gun stuck in one of your kids' mouths, you and even your daughter will do whatever we want. Hell, if I stick a gun in your daughter's mouth and tell you to give your son over there a blowjob, you'd do it.
You're sick, Cindy said.
Smith smiled as he told Cindy and Shanna to take off their clothes. They sat stubbornly looking at Smith.
Open your mouth, T said, looking at Shane as he stuck the barrel of the pistol into his mouth.
Larry and T glared at Cindy and Shanna and said nothing. Cindy and Shanna got the message, stood up, and began to undress.
To the bank. Friday, 4:35 p.m. Dwayne pulled out of the garage, through the gateway of the main fence, and onto the driveway, speeding toward the highway. Pulling onto the road, he left a dust cloud behind him, accelerated, and headed toward town. Although the normal drive to town was about 30 minutes, he figured with the caddy, he could make it in 20. The first 15 minutes were going well until he passed a police car, its flickering red and blue lights in his rearview mirror.
Damn it!
At first he considered not stopping, but he realized that wouldn't work and he'd never get back to the farm with the money. Dwayne pulled over and the police car pulled up behind him. While it felt like the longest 2 minutes of his life, he anxiously waited. Finally, the officer got out of his car and approached.
What's the hurry, Mr. Holcomb?
Came the voice of Deputy Ron Farmer from the driver's side of the car. A few minutes later, Dwayne drove off. A few minutes after that, he parked in front of the bank and ran inside. He tracked down the bank manager, Joyce Milburn, and explained to her he needed to withdraw $27,000. There was a little back and forth between the two of them, with Joyce attempting to talk him out of the withdrawal, but he insisted.
Okay, Mr. Holcomb, I'll get it together for you, but only because of it being the end of the month today. Lucky for you, otherwise we wouldn't have that much on hand.
Thank you, Joyce.
Did you bring a bag?
Dwayne didn't initially understand the question.
A bag? A bag to put the money in?
His mind was swimming, pondering another setback.
That's okay, we'll get you a bag. Just sit tight about 10 minutes and we'll have it ready.
Dwayne stood by a window, looking outside and occasionally glancing around the bank. 10 minutes turned into 15 when Joyce finally called out to Dwayne from behind the teller line. Dwayne walked over to her.
Got it all here for you. Just have to count.
That's okay, Joyce. Let's just pack it up and I'll let you guys close up.
She expressed concern and reluctantly bagged the money and gave it to Dwayne. He said thank you and left. Meanwhile, at the mini mart, Ron was gassing up his cruiser at the pump. He was also gassing up Laura's beat-up Toyota, and as many dads do, Ron was paying for the gas. In Ron's eyes, Laura was an exceptional and talented daughter. She was tall, slender, with long black hair, and was not only smart, but also very athletic, a star player on her high school soccer team, and a second-degree black belt. She had just finished soccer practice.
You going to make it to my karate test tomorrow?
You gotta be kidding. Youngest third-degree black belt this dojo has ever had? Believe it, I'll be there. We're going to have to get a bigger house for the awards you've been winning.
Ron watched Laura as she was about to burst with pride. While Ron and Laura talked, Dwayne's speeding red Cadillac caught Ron's attention. Seeing Dwayne speed out of town convinced him something was off.
There's one for you if you want to get him, Dad, Laura laughed. Looks like the Holcomb's caddy.
Maybe next time. I got something I need to do.
Ron and Laura finished up and said their goodbyes. His suspicions were spiked as he decided to take a drive to the bank. It was already after 5 and the bank was closed when he knocked on the door. Joyce opened the door and greeted him.
Joyce, was Dwayne Holcomb just here?
Sure was. Left about 10 minutes ago.
And?
Spooky. He took out all his money and was acting really odd. In a hurry.
Are you all right? You seem a little nervous, Joyce.
Sorry, seeing you here, and I'm just worried about Dwayne. It just bothering me.
Okay, thanks, Joyce, Ron said as he began to leave.
Something wrong?
Nah, Joyce, like you said, it's just odd.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Back at the farm. Friday, 5:35 p.m. Dwayne approached the driveway and the cows had already made their way into the barn. He contemplated different options about what to do when he got to the house, angrily yelling out and beating the steering wheel. Dwayne stopped at the gate, waited, and thought about it. Dwayne looked at the glove box, then pulled out a .45 caliber M1911 Colt pistol and checked that it was loaded. He then drove the car up to the house and stopped at the front porch. He put the gun underneath his belt on his back, concealing it with his flannel shirt as he got out of the car. Dwayne grabbed a bag of money, ran up the porch steps, and went inside. He closed the door and headed toward the living room, announcing his arrival, but as he entered, everything had changed.
What happened? Dwayne asked.
He looked at Cindy and Shanna sitting on the couch. Shane was in the recliner. Smith was in the middle of the room, beaten up and tied to a kitchen chair with duct tape. A set of legs stuck out from behind the couch.
You're back,
an angry Cindy said.
Yeah, I'm back. What happened?
Well, Daddy, they didn't keep their promise, Shanna said.
Shanna wore her t-shirt and jeans, but her bra hung over the edge of the couch. Dwayne started getting angry, making assumptions about what might have happened.
Why didn't you just get the gun and come back in?
Cindy asked. Dwayne didn't respond, and although mad, he cowered down to Cindy. He stood quietly, taking in what he was seeing.
What happened? Dwayne asked.
That's your question? Cindy said in disbelief. Not, are we okay?
Jorge and Ivan,
Shane blurted out, referring to the two Mexican immigrants who worked for them.
Jorge and Ivan? Dwayne questioned.
Yeah, Jorge and Ivan, Cindy replied. They snuck in when your daughter was getting... and got the drop on him.
Why? Dwayne asked.
Why? Are you serious? Why?
Cindy said.
Well, yeah. I don't understand why they would help us, Dwayne said with some reluctance, which generated looks of duh
from Cindy and the kids.
Really?
Cindy lashed out.
You really need to think about a baby? Really?
Sorry, I just... You guys okay? Dwayne asked.
No, we're not okay.
A very upset and angry Shane said.
I had to sit here with a gun in my mouth and watch Mom and Shanna suck these guys off and get fucked. So no, we're not okay, Dad.
Dwayne didn't know how to respond and didn't say anything.
And little brother here was going to be next. That was their plan. You were going to get schooled on how to suck dick,
Shanna said in a somewhat carefree attitude, eerily changing the serious tone in the room to an almost comedic mood while getting a grin out of Shane.
I really am sorry, guys. Really,
Dwayne said, which gained a nonverbal acknowledgement from his family.
So, can I cut off his dick?
Shanna asked while looking at Smith. Then there was a knock on the door. The axe. Ron left the bank and decided to head out to the Holcomb's farm. He made a few quick calls to his wife and each of his kids, even Laura, who he had just seen, a routine he had been doing almost daily to check in on them. The drive out to the Holcomb's would take 20 to 30 minutes, was not very populated, and only marked with an occasional mailbox on the side of the road. Ron did some reflecting during the drive. When Ron arrived at the driveway, he turned and slowly drove toward the house. Both sides of the drive were flanked by open fields, except for the house and barns that were fenced in. As Ron approached the house, he drove through the gate and then stopped his cruiser just on the other side, in front of the tool shed. Ron approached cautiously as he looked around. The red Caddy was parked in front of the porch. Everything seemed okay as Ron walked up the front porch steps. Before knocking, he thought it'd be a good idea to check things out, listen, and glance through a window. Inside the house, the Holcombs all stopped talking and said nothing until a second knock. Shane was closest to the front window and looked outside.
It's a cop.
Brief panic overcame them.
Dwayne, it's Ron Farmer. Are you in there?
Dwayne gained his composure and decided to answer the door.
Just follow my lead, Dwayne whispered. Don't do anything, and we just tell him the truth about what these guys did. That should work.
Dwayne's proposal didn't get the response he expected from Cindy and the kids.
Shanna kinda told Smith a little something she shouldn't have, Shane said.
Dwayne looked at Shanna, who gave him a sheepish,
Daddy, I'm sorry, look,
accompanied with a smile. He then glanced over at Smith.
Man, I don't know nothing,
Smith said, shrugging. Dwayne shook his head in disbelief, then headed to the door, opened it, and went outside, leaving the door halfway open.
Sorry it took so long, Ron.
That's okay, Dwayne. I understand you had to get your story straight.
Dwayne didn't understand what Ron meant.
It's okay, Dwayne. I mean, you got an escaped convict duct taped to a chair in your living room. That's not something you see every day.
Cindy bolted out the door, yelling and crying.
They raped us. They came in here, raped me, our daughter, and made our son watch while they did it. One of them is dead, and I'm going to kill the other one for what he did.
Dwayne convinced Cindy to go back inside the house after gaining some apparent sympathy from Ron.
Listen, I know this is awful and I'd want to kill him too. I really, really would, and I understand. But the best I can do is leave for 30 minutes, then come back.
Dwayne was confused by Ron's statement. What's he telling me?
When I come back, that convict needs to still be alive. You can kick the shit out of him, have a come to Jesus gathering. Whatever you need to do for you and the girls to feel better. But he needs to be in one piece. Do not kill him. Understand?
Dwayne hesitated for a second, then nodded.
Half an hour. I'll be down the road, then I'll come back. Okay?
All right. Half an hour. Ron headed to his car and left. When Dwayne went inside the house, his family was standing by the door.
I guess you heard that.
Heard what?
Smith asked as the family took a moment to think.
I'm sorry, I still want to cut his dick off.
Shanna said with a crazed smile. Suddenly, T jumped up from behind the couch, yelling and startling everyone. Having been caught in the act earlier by Jorge and Ivan, T's pants were still down around his knees.
"I thought he was dead," Dwayne said.
"No, he just took a pretty good pounding to the head," Cindy said.
"So why didn't you tie him up?"
"Oh, I don't know," Cindy said, sarcasm dripping from her words. "Maybe because we're a bit busy getting our clothes back on while Jorge and Ivan tied the other one up. This happened 5 minutes before you got here."
Shane and Shanna immediately ran toward T and knocked him to the floor. Together, they banged his head on the floor a few times until he appeared to be unconscious. Shanna quickly jumped up and ran out of the room.
"Where are you going? Where is she going?"
Cindy asked everyone. Within a few seconds, Shanna ran back into the living room carrying a carving knife.
"What are you doing?" Dwayne asked sternly.
Shanna didn't answer, and with lightning speed, she jumped on T, straddled his legs, grabbed his penis, and sliced it off.
"Cutting off his dick, Dad! That's what I'm doing! Yes!"
With euphoric glee, she raised her hands in the air, the knife in her right hand, the severed penis in her left. Shanna then stood up and turned towards Smith.
"You're next,"
Shanna said.
"What the hell?"
Cindy said.
"Damn it, Shanna. What the hell are you thinking? We can't do this. How are we going to explain this?"
Dwayne asked.
"He had it coming. The one over there has it coming too. They raped us, Dad, and would have done it to Shane too if Jorge and Ivan hadn't stopped them."
"Hey, guys,"
Shane blurted out.
"What?"
Dwayne answered.
"You know, this guy is going to bleed to death. He's bleeding all over the place."
The hokum stood around T.
"Damn it, damn it," Dwayne muttered.
Every day, Halloween. Friday, 6:15 p.m. Ron stopped about a mile down the road and waited. He caught up on some work on the laptop, sent a few text messages, including one to Laura, and waited until it was time to head back. As Ron drove back to the farmhouse and approached the gateway by the tool shed, two Hispanic men peeked around the corner. They looked at Ron and ducked behind the shed as he approached. Ron stopped the car just past the gateway in front of the shed, keeping an eye out. He got out of the car, pulled out his pistol, and started to move along the side of the shed. A head popped out from behind the shed, along with a hand, waving Ron to hurry. As Ron approached the rear of the shed, he yelled at the men to show their hands. This got an instant response as they put their hands in the air. One of them put his finger over his mouth, followed by both men whispering loudly at Ron to be quiet.
"You got to be quiet before they see you. You got to be careful, careful," Jorge said.
Both men rambled in broken English as they whispered to Ron.
"Be careful, Señor Dwayne, his wife, those crazy kids. They're all crazy," Jorge said.
Jorge and the other man, Ivan, told Ron how inside the barn was another building where people were being kept and murdered. They told him that they were forced to be farmhands because their wives and kids were kept prisoner inside the building. When Ron questioned them about the possibility of escape, they told him it was impossible because of the electronic locks on the doors. They emphasized that the building was strong, made out of concrete with steel doors and no windows. Ron was reluctant to believe their story. Although convincing, it was far-fetched. But still, he decided he was going to call for some help.
"Why don't you come with me?" Ron told them.
They shook their heads and backed away, telling Ron,
"No way,"
as they moved back behind the shed. Ron holstered his pistol and headed back to his car. He popped the switch, unlocked the trunk, and was about to call dispatch when the barn door creaked open. Ron moved toward the front of the car to check the house.
"Hey, Deputy Farmer,"
Shanna said in an unusually flirtatious manner.
"How you doing, Shanna? What's going on?"
"Oh, you know, getting ready for Halloween."
Shanna snatched the long-handled axe standing up against the tool shed and ran toward Ron, swinging it. Ron sidestepped as the axe crashed down onto the hood of the car. Ron grabbed Shanna around the chest and body slammed her to the ground, knocking the breath out of her. He grabbed a flex cuff off his belt and secured her wrist to the ramming bar on the front of the patrol car.
What the hell, Shanna?
Shanna didn't answer. She just glared into Ron's eyes. A tremendous blow to his back knocked Ron to the ground. Shane had snuck up behind Ron with another axe. It didn't feel like it penetrated his flesh, but did go part of the way into his Kevlar vest, which saved him, at least for the moment. The force of Shane's swing came close to knocking Ron out. Shane struggled a moment with one foot on Ron's back as he pulled the axe out of his vest. Shane raised the axe to give Ron a death blow, then Dwayne grabbed his arms and stopped him.
Let's take him inside.
Dwayne grabbed a flex cuff off Ron's belt and with Shane's help secured Ron's wrists behind his back. Dwayne and Shane struggled with Ron as they dragged him by his arms toward the barn. Ron resisted, struggling against his captors. He almost gained control until Dwayne used a taser on him, paralyzing Ron.
Hey, what about me?
Shanna whined.
We'll be right back to get you, Dwayne said.
About 20 feet inside the barn door, there was a concrete building with a metal door. When they got to the door, Dwayne placed his thumb over a lock system, one that was set up for either a fingerprint or combination. When the door unlocked, they dragged Ron inside and closed the door. Ron continued to struggle, but every time he moved, it sent intense pain through his left shoulder and down his back. They dragged him to an old wooden chair and sat him on it. Nearby, Smith also sat duct-taped to a chair.
What happened? Cindy asked.
Shanna tried to kill him with an axe, Shane said, then laughed.
But so did I.
Shane grappled with Ron as he removed his gun belt and phone and set them on a nearby table as Dwayne duct-taped Ron's wrists and ankles to the chair.
I guess Ron here is axe-proof, Dwayne said with a chuckle.
Where's Shanna?
Cindy asked, thinking nothing was funny.
Handcuffed to the front bumper of his car, Dwayne answered.
Someone go get her.
We will, we will. Maybe we should leave her out there a while so she don't do anything else stupid, Shane said.
I'm not going to get her. I'm still prepping tomorrow's barbecue,
Cindy jokingly told them. Cindy focused on a 17-year-old naked girl tied to a large table, mouth gagged with duct tape. Cindy bent slightly and looked into the girl's eyes.
Yummy, Cindy said.
Ron surveyed the room, trying to think of a way to escape. The building was almost as wide and as long as the barn itself. An assortment of bench-type tables lined the walls. Knives, axes, and other gadgets hung on the walls, and oddly enough, he thought, a very clean and organized workroom. There was also a center hallway that looked like it had more rooms on both sides of the hall.
You wondering what's back there? Dwayne asked. I have to compliment you, Dwayne. You're very organized and clean. Well, thank you. Unfortunately for you and Smith over there, you won't get to experience how organized, like this young lady on the table will. In a half hour or so, your friends are going to start looking for you, and wouldn't you know it, you're going to be a hero who saved us.
The lock clicked and the door opened.
Oh my God,
Cindy said as Shanna walked in, holding her bleeding left wrist.
What the hell? You guys didn't come get me. I thought something happened to you. Did you cut off your hand?
Shane yelled.
Well, yeah, I thought something had happened. Good thing that axe was still in the hood of his car.
Cindy and Shane rushed to Shanna and started bandaging her wrist. Dwayne shrugged, shook his head, and turned back to Ron.
Well, I guess we'll have to edit our story a bit to explain that, Dwayne said. But hey, you're going to be the hero who saved us from the convicts. Thank you for that. But how are you going to explain this place, that girl, and everyone you got back there? Oh yeah, down the hallway. This place was just an idea 15 years ago, but it only took a year and a half to build. Me and Cindy did it ourselves over time. Back there, we got 6 rooms on each side, steel doors, plumbing, and get this, full occupancy ever since we finished it.
Occupancy?
Yeah, full house. Someone in every room. Sometimes we keep a family of the help in a room. We got the wives and kids of those two Mexicans, and the rest, well...
Dwayne motioned at the girl on the table.
You've been doing this for 15 years? Oh, more than that. My psycho dad did this shit, and Cindy there? I don't really know. She just took a liking to me.
And do you eat him? Ron asked with disdain, generating a laugh from Dwayne.
Ha! You know it's Halloween week, but, you know, for us, every week is Halloween.
Dwayne said.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Not only that, but this week is the best Halloween ever because we got you, Mr. Smith over there, tea back at the house, table girl there. We got a quadruple celebration going on with all of you.
Dwayne continued his euphoric rant.
Oh, and back to your question about us eating them? Well, that's kind of one of those in-house rumors the hired help passes along. Makes them a little more scared. But we also tell them that we eat them to get them more worked up.
You don't eat them?
Nah. Truth is, we really like killing people. No, wait. We really love killing people.
Dwayne laughed with enthusiastic glee.
We try to only bring women here because, well, they're just more fun for some reason.
They scream and beg more, Cindy added.
I just like them because they're girls, Shane chimed in.
I like chopping things, Shanna said.
That's the truth, even your own hand,
Shane said as the whole family laughed. It was clear to Ron that killing was an addiction for them. Their moods changed when they looked at the girl. They anticipated the kill. Ron glanced over at Smith, who looked at the ceiling, shaking his head. Cindy finished bandaging Shanna's wrist.
Look what you did, Smith. You cut off my hand,
Shanna said as she walked over to him and rubbed her bandaged nub on his face.
That'll work, Dwayne said. Yeah, that'll work just fine. Blame Smith for the hand, then Ron shoots Smith.
But who shoots Ron?
Cindy asked. They paused and thought about it.
T. T shoots Ron, then we get Larry's gun and kill T,
Dwayne explained.
That's a great idea, Dad,
Shane said, except for the part about his dick being cut off.
What? Ron asked. Oh, yeah. He wasn't dead at first, and Shanna cut his dick off,
Dwayne answered.
Yeah, you're going to have to explain that, Ron told them.
They took a few seconds and did some more thinking about their plan.
Shoot him in the dick. T killed Ron. Mom gets the gun and empties the magazine, shooting him like 10 times. And because he raped us, she let him have it a few times in the dick. We just make sure it's enough times to make it look like that's what happened,
Shanna said. They looked at Ron, kind of waiting to see what he thought of the idea. Ron thought it might work, but he shook his head in disbelief.
You know what? My wife watches Dr. Phil, and I've had to listen to it, and I'm going to tell you right now, not even Dr. Phil can fix this.
Dwayne didn't have a response, and by his reaction, Ron could tell that Dwayne didn't like the Dr. Phil remark.
Okay then, that's the plan, Dwayne said.
The Holcombs moved about the room, systematically gathering axes of assorted sizes before carrying them to the table in the center of the room. The girl frantically pulled on her restraints and screamed through the duct tape. The Holcombs' faces gleamed as they hovered around the table like wolves, smacking their lips, holding their axes.
Wings or thighs? Dwayne asked his family.
Think Shanna should do a wing, you know, because of her arm? Might be easier,
Cindy suggested.
Okay, Shane, you can have the other wing, and me and Mom will take the thighs,
Dwayne said matter-of-factly as they maneuvered around the table to their positions. Ron feverishly tried to break his arms free, to
to no avail, bouncing around in the chair, and noticed Dwayne giving him an expression that he interpreted as, "Really?" Dwayne and Cindy positioned themselves by the girl's hips, far enough from the table to get a good swing with their axes. Shane was by the left shoulder, Shanna by the right, where she had a good angle to cut with her axe using her left hand. On the table, the girl continued to plead, wiggle, and pull on the restraints. Shanna rambled almost continuously.
"It's best that you don't move around when we do this,"
Shanna said as she held up the axe and showed it to the girl. This made the girl more hysterical, generating more laughs from the Holcombs. Shanna teased the girl with the axe.
"Shit,"
Shanna said as she dropped it. She picked up the axe and raised it over her head, supporting it with her right arm, but dropped it again.
"Okay, enough. Let's get going. I'm three, okay?"
Dwayne directed as Shanna picked the axe up once more. They all took their spots and slightly backed away from the table, raising the axes above their heads.
"One, two,
no, wait,
Ron yelled. The count stopped.
"What?"
Dwayne yelled back.
"You don't have time to do that. Like you said, they're going to be looking for me. You gotta get Smith and me back to the house for your plan to work."
"Motherfucker!"
Larry said with a muffle while jerking around in his chair. Ron's instinct was an attempt to save the girl. He knew it could mean his life, but he held on to faith that there would be a way out of this situation. Shanna dropped her axe, mumbled, and walked over to a stool by the table and sat next to Ron.
"He's right,"
Cindy reluctantly told Dwayne. The mood in the room changed to disappointment. Each of the Holcombs appeared to pout, yet depressed, and idle by themselves for a few minutes. Of course, this didn't stop the girl from her continuous crying and muffled pleas.
"Motherfucker!"
Larry said to Ron, not caring for the idea that Ron put their deaths on the fast track, even though it slowed them down. A couple of minutes passed.
"Let's put her back in her room and get them back to the house," Dwayne said, his previous enthusiasm gone.
The Holcomb started untying the struggling girl from the table, except for Shanna, who stayed on the stool. A few seconds later, Ron's phone, on the table next to him, played AC/DC's Thunderstruck. A text alert from Lara chimed with an alert. Shanna checked the phone. 3 minutes earlier. Most Friday nights, Lara would stop by the Holcomb's farm and pick up Shanna before heading into town. This Friday night was extra special because of the Halloween festival. Lara turned off the main road and headed up the driveway in her Toyota. As Laura approached the end of the driveway, a police cruiser parked by the gateway blocked the entrance.
"Dad?"
she said aloud. She parked behind the cruiser. The Cadillac was parked in front of the house, and she remembered how her dad reacted when it sped out of town. She got on her cell phone and texted him.
"Where you at?"
"What should we tell her?"
Shanna asked Ron.
"Don't tell her anything," Ron said.
Shanna teasingly paused and thought about texting Lara as Ron watched. Dwayne, Cindy, and Shane didn't pay much attention to Shanna, distracted as they untied the girl who kept struggling. As Shanna was doing her text or not to text routine with Ron, she glanced at the surveillance monitor, as did Ron, and saw Lara outside. Shanna was surprised, then got angry, headed toward the door, and stormed out.
"Where are you going?"
Cindy asked as Shanna left. Then she looked at Ron.
"Kids, so unpredictable, aren't they?"
Ron told Cindy with a slight grin. Cindy shook her head and turned back around. Ron knew something about his daughter that they didn't.
What are you smiling about?"
Smith asked. Laura attacks. Outside the barn. When Lara didn't get a reply from her dad, she got out of her car and walked up to the cruiser. She looked inside, then noticed the gash on the hood. She then walked toward the front.
"Shit!"
Lara gasped and stepped back. A flex cuff attached to the ramming bar still held a hand. A trail of blood led to the barn door. The barn door flew open with a creak, and out came Shanna with a sadistic smile. Shanna, with a blood-soaked rag where her hand used to be, confirmed Laura's sense that something was not right.
Sorry, Laura, I forgot about tonight,
Shanna said gleefully as she approached Laura, bending over to grab the bloody axe on the ground with her right hand.
Damn,
she said, giggling as she realized she didn't have that one anymore.
Forgetting a lot today.
Shanna grabbed the axe handle and ran toward Laura. Laura responded instantly, backing away and timing Shanna's swing, then pow, a front kick, karate style, to Shanna's chest. Shanna flew back with the axe landing on her back. Out of nowhere, Ivan ran from behind the tool shed with another axe. He didn't give Shanna a chance to react as he slammed the axe into her chest. Laura's initial reaction was to stop Ivan, but she was distracted by Jorge, who was running toward her, yelling. Jorge abruptly stopped so Laura wouldn't hit him. Jorge, along with Ivan, started talking.
They're all crazy, miss, crazy,
Ivan said.
What?
A confused but oddly composed Laura replied.
They got the policeman inside and the escaped prisoner and our wives and kids,
Jorge explained. It took a minute, but they were able to explain in broken English the situation to Laura. They told her that the Holcombs, all four of them, were kidnapping, murdering cannibals, fattening up their victims for months while keeping the families of people like Ivan and Jorge hostage, forcing them to work the farm. Laura took in what she was told by the two adrenaline-charged workers. She reflected on their story, overwhelmed with conflicting emotions of fear, panic, and an impulse to race into the barn to save her dad. She looked at Shanna with an axe in her chest, her hand dangling off the front of her dad's car. She figured it had to be true, or at least some version of it. Her dad wouldn't leave a hand dangling off his car for nothing. Laura had to act, do something. Standing around wasn't the answer. She looked inside the patrol car. The keys dangled from the ignition. She grabbed the keys, unlocked the 12-gauge shotgun from the dashboard, and handed it to Jorge. She headed back to the trunk and pulled out an AR-15 rifle and a magazine. As she loaded the gun, she observed a look of bewilderment and awe on Ivan and Jorge. Aside from being a military brat, at 17, she was a second-degree black belt. The tight camaraderie of the Green Beret families meant most of the children had the opportunity to learn extra skills, and for many, that included learning how to shoot.
You know how to use that?
She asked Jorge, motioning to the shotgun. He nodded.
You okay using that axe again?
She asked Ivan.
Si,
Ivan nervously answered.
Let's go get him,
Laura said, giving them a reassuring smile. With her weapon in hand, she took the lead and moved toward the barn like she was commanding a SWAT team. Laura cautiously approached the barn and opened the door. When the door creaked, she stopped. Ivan stepped forward and slowly opened the door the rest of the way without making a sound. They moved forward to the building inside the barn, to the metal door with an electronic locking device on it. As soon as she realized the problem, Ivan ran out of the barn to the police cruiser, ripped a hand off the car, and ran back inside the barn. Laura organized the plan. Jorge would pull the door open after Ivan placed Shanna's thumb on the sensor, then Laura would enter the room. Ron watched the activity on the monitors as the Holcombs teased the girl while taking her down the hallway. He saw what happened to Shanna and that his daughter, Ivan, and Jorge were about to come inside. Ron hoped she could get in while the Holcombs were still down the hallway. Keeping an eye on the monitor, Ron saw that Laura was about to enter, but the Holcombs had finally put the girl back in her room.
How are we going to move them?
Shane asked as they came back from the hallway.
Wait, where's Shanna?
Cindy asked as Dwayne walked to the table with the monitors right next to Ron. Dwayne looked at the monitor where his daughter lay with an axe in her chest.
No!
Dwayne yelled as the door flew open. Dwayne reached for Ron's pistol on the table. Ron stood up as best as he could, being tied to the chair, and rushed Dwayne. They both fell to the floor, but Dwayne quickly stood up and pointed the pistol at Ron. Laura, without hesitation, fired two shots into Dwayne's chest. Shane charged Laura with a knife, but Jorge took him out with the shotgun. Ivan stood by the door ready to swing his axe. Laura quickly turned her attention to Cindy, pointing the rifle at her. Cindy didn't move and started to cry and yell at Laura.
Who are you? Who are you? Look what you've done.
Untie me, Ron said.
Laura motioned for Ivan to free Ron.
Who are you?
Ron yelled at Cindy as he got up off the floor.
What is wrong with you?
Ron surveyed the room but didn't say anything to Laura. He acted like it was just another day on the job. He picked up his gun from Dwayne's hand and walked over to Cindy, the gun aimed at her head.
What are you doing? You can't kill me. You're a cop. How are you going to explain killing me?
Smith did it, Ron answered as he pulled the trigger.
You're murderer,
Smith muffled. As soon as Cindy hit the floor, Jorge and Ivan dropped their weapons and ran down the hallway to their families.
How the hell did they get the drop on you, Dad?
Laura asked.
I don't know. Getting old, I guess.
Ron answered with a slight grin as Laura angrily looked at him.
It's true what Jorge and Ivan said they were doing? Killing and eating people?
Yeah, except for that cannibal stuff. They just told them that to scare them even more. They did this shit simply because they liked it. They looked around the room. Larry was still tied to the chair.
Did a good job. You okay? Ron asked.
Thanks, yeah,
Laura said.
But we need to get those people out of there.
You're right. Laura flipped the rifle around her back and headed down the hallway.
Wait a second, Ron said.
What?
Should probably wait. I want to get them out, but there could be 20 of them down there and we can't handle that. We need to call this in and get some help out here. You can get the girl out of that last door on the left. She had the shit scared out of her. Go get her, okay?
Laura went to get the girl as Ron called out to Jorge and Ivan. They both came into the room with their wives and children. Jorge had two young boys and Ivan a young girl. A minute later, Laura walked back into the room with the girl.
No sheets, blankets, clothes, anything to cover her up with, Laura said.
The girl stood there naked without shame. Ivan's wife ran back to their room and came back with a blanket and covered the girl.
I have to call for help. But you can't be here, understand? Ron said to Ivan and Jorge. You need to leave, or else when the help gets here, they'll give you to INS and send you back home.
Both families spoke in Spanish to each other. They then nodded in agreement.
It's okay, Jorge said. We'll go back home if that's all right with you. We've had enough of the American dream.
Ron and Laura understood. They escorted Jorge and Ivan, along with their families, out of the barn and walked them over to the tool shed and told them to stay.
Why don't you go ahead and call this in, okay? I got something I need to do, Ron said.
Laura went back to the cruiser to make the call for her dad. Ron went inside the barn. As he stepped inside the door, he looked over at Smith.
Didn't think I forgot about you, did you?
Smith didn't respond. Ron walked over to him, cut him loose from the chair and took the duct tape off his mouth. Ron then went to the table and got his gun belt and placed it around his waist.
It's back to prison for you.
I've been thinking about that, Smith said as he stood up and leaned against the table.
What?
I'm not sure what people will think about you leaving me for that half hour with these psychos.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? Really? You could have got me out of here. Instead, you gave me to them. And yeah, kind of backfired on you.
Smith laughed and continued.
But still, that's not right. Then shooting that psycho mom over there, that's not what cops are supposed to do.
I guess you're right. So what are you thinking?
Cut me loose before your friends get here. And then, like you said earlier, you can tell them I did it. I shot the mom.
Don't forget about raping them.
Yeah, that too.
Ron paced the room and thought it over. So what you're suggesting is that if you're gone, I can pin the kidnapping and the killings of this family on you. Is that it?
Well, yeah, except no one finds out by you leaving me with them.
Good point, Mr. Smith.
What if I kill you? Isn't that the same end?
You got loose, I got loose, you killed him, then I killed you because you were going to kill me?
Hell, even my daughter coming in here, it's a believable scenario. So what's the benefit of letting you go? Smith was momentarily stumped. You see, Mr. Smith, had these guys been a normal family and not the hillbilly psycho gang, I would have come back and got you, left, and headed out.
Yeah, that's right.
That is right. But as we both know, that didn't happen.
Let's say it did, and I put you in my car and off we went. What do you think would have happened?
You'd have taken me to jail.
Really? That's what you think would have happened?
Well, nothing. I know you'd tell how I left you. Have you thought about why I would do something so stupid? Something to jeopardize my entire career and land me in prison? Any ideas?
No, not really,
Smith said as he hesitantly shook his head. You were in prison for rape and murder. You already raped them and you would have killed them too.
You're defending those psychos?
No, Mr. Smith, you're right. They're psychos. But you didn't know that when you raped those girls, and since that screwed up Illinois did away with the death penalty, you'd just get sent back there. You would have gotten away with it again.
Still?
No stills or wells about it, Mr. Smith. I planned on picking you up, driving you down the road, and killing you. That simple.
Smith didn't know what to say as he nervously looked around the room.
And you know what?
What?
That's still my plan.
Ron stood on the other side of the room, drew his pistol, and shot Smith 3 times in the chest. Hearing the shots, Laura ran toward the barn door until her dad came out.
You okay?
A scared Laura asked.
I'm fine. The convict?
He didn't make it.
Ron and Laura walked toward the cars while in the distance a string of emergency lights headed their way. Laura's mind was still in overdrive, coming down from the adrenaline rush.
Hey, Dad?
What?
You're not okay,
Laura said, upset with her dad. They stopped walking.
Laura, don't Laura me. You always do this.
Do what?
Act like nothing happened? Like what just happened is just normal shit? Dad, it's not normal. It's not another day at the office. You almost got killed by those freaks. And oh my God, me and Shanna were friends. Really close. And it turns out she's a psycho bitch. How is any of this normal?
It's okay.
It's not okay. How'd they even get the drop on you? You know better, Dad. It's like you got this death wish sometimes. It's like you won't deal with that PTSD crap. Don't you get it? We can't lose you. Losing Anna was enough for all of us. You can't be doing stupid stuff, letting things happen. Please, don't.
I know, baby girl.
I know you know. And what happened here today had a good end. I mean, serial killing family in our backyard got caught and eliminated, for Christ's sake, Dad.
Laura, language.
Not language, Dad. That noodle of yours. Do you still go to your meetings and counseling? The counseling worked back at Fort Lewis. It took a bit, but it ended up working.
It did work. I still go.
Good. Just don't let that head of yours take you to those dark places. Please don't quit.
You becoming a philosopher?
Ron added with a loving smile.
No, I just love my dad.
Laura's eyes teared up.
I'll be okay. We'll be okay. I promise.
Ron pulled Laura in and hugged her.
Oh, shit.
Ron whispered while still embracing Laura as the line of emergency vehicles approached.
What?
Everything's going to change.
What do you mean?
Laura asked as they broke their embrace. Ron grasped her shoulders and she listened intently.
Laura, you don't understand and don't know things about your home, this town. It has secrets. Not all good. Some bad secrets. Really bad. Probably secrets that should stay secret. And with this fiasco, everything will change. Everything.
Laura stared into her dad's face as his demeanor changed. He looked worried. She had no idea what he meant by everything will change. To be continued, Farmerville, Episode 2, Laura Unhinged.
I hope you enjoyed Farmerville Episode 1, Till Those Cows Come Home, as written by Marty Martin and performed by me, Paul J. McSorley. Marty Martin's current writing interest is focused on mysteries and thrillers with his Farmerville series. As a grandparent, he also has an award-winning children's book series based on his experiences with his grandchildren, Adventures with Pop Pop. You can find the print version of tonight's terrifying tale on Amazon, listed by the same name. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyrie has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.